former EastEnders actress and her two young sons, died as a result of head and neck injuries. Cyan Blake, 8-year-old Zachary, and Eamon, who was 4, disappeared last month. Their bodies were found in the garden of their home in Erith in southeast London on Tuesday. A man carrying a meat cleaver and wearing a fake suicide vest has been shot dead outside a Paris police station. The incident happened a year, almost to the minute, after the attack which killed 11 people at the offices of Charlie Hebdo magazine. Prosecutors say he was also carrying a picture of an Islamic State flag. France's Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve says an investigation's underway.
The person who carried out this attack and who was killed when the police were obliged to open fire is being identified, and in the coming hours we will know more about his history and his motivation.
An apparent U-turn by the Prime Minister appears to have put a sugar tax back on the government's agenda. He previously ruled out the measure, targeting the soft drinks industry, despite the support of doctors and celebrity chef Jamie Oliver. But his stance seems to have softened. As he told reporters earlier, obesity needed to be treated as seriously as smoking.
I don't really want to put new taxes onto anything, but we do have to recognise that we face potentially in Britain something of an obesity crisis.
A 79-year-old man has been reported to prosecutors after driving almost 20 miles on the wrong side of a motorway. Police say it happened in the early hours of this morning on the M8 between Glasgow and Shotts in North Lanarkshire. The vehicle was apparently travelling east on the westbound carriageway. Alan Curtis will remain Swansea boss until the end of the season. He'd been in charge of the Premier League club on a caretaker basis since Gary Monk's departure last month. They're 17th in the table, only 2 points above the relegation zone. And footballers' rulemaking body is recommending trials for video technology to help referees. The International Football Association board has met to discuss the idea. That's the latest. I'm Charlie Maggs.
This is Phoenix FM.
Keep taking for the rest of- Biffy Clyro on Phoenix FM. You're listening to 50 Shades of Chey, and this is the first week of 2016, which we've been which we're broadcasting. So, welcome to the show, and I've got a guest with me this evening. His name is Adam Sinclair, and he's going to play some tunes. We have a chat, and I'll tell you what, he's going to be the most interesting guest I'm going to have for a good while. I'll tell you that with the stories he's going to tell you this evening. So, here is Blur with Ong Ong. We have some Catfish at the Bottom Men, and then we're going to get chatting.
Out of this town.
Catfish and the Bottlemen with Pacifier. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce you to you all to Mr. Adam Sinclair.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Let me just get my cans on.
Right, okay, so, Adam.
Yes.
I'm very, very pleased you're on, because I genuinely feel like you're going to tell us some really interesting stories this evening. Right, because, I mean, let's put it this way. You spent how long in the jungle?
A month.
And what jungle was that?
It was part of the Panama jungle. It was in a place called Palenque in Panama.
Palenque?
Yeah, in Panama. Yeah, yeah.
So it's very exotic.
America. It was. It's the Caribbean.
Well, because it's something we were talking about in the car on the way up here. And I was just like, save them stories for the radio, my friend. Save them stories for the radio.
Yeah, I was staying there. It was part of the tribal gathering festival. It was where like 11 Mayan tribes come from South America and Central America, and they gather together and teach each other their ways of their tribes. They teach the ways that they make chocolate. Now, I've had the best chocolate you ever put in your mouth, Shay. I've like pure dark chocolate, like organic dark chocolate. It was like a brownie, but pure chocolate. I mean, there's no additives. There's no cake. It was like brownie. It was. Unbelievable.
Excuse me, sir. You have not tried one of my brownies. Well, I say my brownies, my cookies. My cookies are
euphemism?
Fantastic.
Is that euphemism?
No. Even though this show is called 50 Shades of Che, you know, I think that there has to be some sort of potential guidance to the whole field. So,
brilliant.
But yeah, we'll talk more about that. Because you don't. I mean, this is your music is your day job.
Yes, at the moment. At the moment it is, and I'm very pleased and grateful for that. But it, like I said in the Cartier, it was because I decided that I was just going to do it and devote my time for it. A lot of the time we get distracted with life, don't we? And most of us have got something burning inside of us that we all just want to do, and we never kind of get round to. Well, for me, it was devoting my time to what I want to do.
Yeah.
And like, it can be seen as maybe selfish of me, because sometimes people normally work, don't they? You know, people normally get up and do a job to justify their, I hate to say it, but justify their existence. And we all just accept it. It's something that we do, you know. Existence is right now too, you know, everything is justifying it. But I decided, like, right, I've been sick of being unhappy with what I was doing, and so I decided, right, I'm now going to focus on this music I've been writing for years and not doing anything with. And I met a lot of inspiring people too, you know. It made me want to kick myself up the bum and just do it, you know, because they're doing it and they're doing good.
So when was you went away? Because I think I remember. Because there's a really weird story here. Because Adam used to work where I worked. And was Norbert Dongersonga, wasn't it? So
yes.
But essentially, you it's a great thing because you wrote your resignation letter on my computer where I worked in my section because I got promoted like a year ago.
Ooh. You're not going to read it out, are you?
No. Well, but then I was just like, and then I bumped into you probably maybe about 6 months ago before when I first met you,
right?
And yeah. And then I probably I know that name from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I think I went onto Facebook. I mean, you added me, and I looked down your list of mutual friends and realised that's him. Right. He's the guy.
That's the guy who was really angry at Tesco's.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's me.
But we won't go into that. Mm. Instead of talking about the music, but then you left there and you went out to Panama.
Yeah. Well, firstly, it wasn't like when I left there, I'd saved up a bunch of money and I was just like, I knew that I was going to do something with the music. The year previous, I sort of said to my friends in Australia that I was going to make some music in the years I'm going to be away from Australia. Hmm. I'm going back there at the end of this year, and that would have been like 3 years since I've been there. And I said to them, I'm going to do something. Because I've been doing shows in Melbourne, and I got a taste for the lifestyle. That's what I was doing four nights a week. And I got a proper taste for it. So then I promised them that I'd do something. So I want to come home and just get a normal job. I wanted to carry on being creative like they are.
Yeah.
So I decided that I was just going to do this music. And so leaving that job was the start of actually getting off my butt and doing it. You know, I'd been home a year to that point of leaving. That was the last job that I've done was December 2014. I've just done travelling and music since. So it started off with me going to America. I went to New York first, and then I went down to the festival from New York, and then went back to New York after the festival.
Hmm.
And that was all just for kicks. There was no kind of divine plan of me, you know, not like the Beatles going to Marrakesh or anything like that, going to learn meditation, even though they're the things that I did at this festival. Like, it wasn't no profound, right, I'm going to go to the jungle and become a spiritual or anything like that. No, it was just that this was just going to be fun. The end of the month in the jungle was a music festival. The other 3 weeks were all sort of like devoted to like organic living and tribal life and that kind of like grassroots thing and meditation and lots of yoga and stuff like that, which I participated in there here and then, and lots of workshops, music workshops, live music, drum circles, lots of really nice stuff that just makes you want to get up in the morning, you know. It's just beautiful stuff. And then I wrote a bunch of music in the jungle, and that's a lot of the music that people hear now, live. They've manifested into this collection of songs I've got now.
I'm going to make sure you play a good few of those songs this evening, because, I mean, we're going to do a couple of kachars now, because you are on the Thames compilation.
Yeah, I am. Happy to be on that.
Yeah, and the song on there is really, really good. I've played it on the show a few times.
Yeah, thanks for that, Shay. Like, it's been played on the show a lot of the times without me even knowing. Like, you've played it. I think you played it without me knowing at the time. And James played it, like, a week after it was recorded, James Phillips. Hmm. And I just sort of missed it. He sort of was like, did you listen to the show on Sunday? And I'm like, oh, no, man, I missed it. I played your song. And that was kind of a moment. Like, it's like, wow, how do I celebrate? How do you celebrate that, having a song on the radio 7 days after it was recorded? And I was thinking, actually, today, Shay, about that song, that's on the compilation Passenger, okay, and where that came from. I put a tweet out saying, like, sort of, thanks to the boys for helping me record it, and, like, sort of Dorian and the guys over at Thames Delta for putting it on the iTunes. You know, without them, it wouldn't be possible. But I was thinking about where it stems back to, how far that song really goes back to, and it comes back to me working at that place where you were working. That was written, the words at least, were written on a walk home from a night shift after a particular time when I wasn't enjoying that job. You know, we've said on here already that I wrote my resignation letter on your computer, like I wasn't happy there. And that song isn't a sad song, but it's just what I was literally witnessing on the way home and thinking, which I just wrote down when I got back and then went to bed. Hmm. And then it manifested into a song then as soon as I woke up, pretty much. So, like, I think, like, so I say, without the guys at Liquid Egg and without the guys at Thames Delta, it wouldn't be possible. But without, oddly, without that place I worked, there wouldn't be that song. Because I wouldn't have been walking home at that time in the morning, and I wouldn't have been witnessing the things that I say in the songs, like the things about the elements and the weather and stuff. That's all. That's a literal thing that I was seeing. And so without that, that particular morning, after that particular night shift, me leaving Melbourne to come home to do that job, without all the, like, visas ending, without this whole snow, you've got to be thinking, how far back really does a song go? You know, like, you're a songwriter yourself. Like, how far, when you think about, once you've got a song finished and you think about where that came from, how far back did that all of the experiences you've had, you could go back even to when you were in school, and that all of the things that triggered up to this point for you to write that song, you never know. You might have experienced things like that sort of made you think a certain way about a certain thing, and then suddenly you've got a song about that thing, and if it weren't for that original experience, then you wouldn't have even had that perspective. So it's funny, I was thinking about that literally today, about where that song came from after I put that tweet out. And I was like, damn, if I hadn't done that really bad night job, that song, excuse me, wouldn't have existed. It just wouldn't have done, you know?
Because, I mean, some people, I like working, I do. But, but I mean, for you, it wasn't the fact that it probably was, it just wasn't for you, was it? I mean, in a day, you said you want to... We're talking around the corner on the way up here. Yeah. Is that you want to do a certain thing,
yeah,
which is very unique in comparing to how other people live their lives.
Yes, it seems that way. It seems that it's unique, but really, until... And I used to think that. I remember when I sat in the car down here, it feels like a big... Like, it's all a bit hush-hush. It's all a big secret about how you do get into this creative, doing-what-you-want life.
Yeah.
You see it. We all see it through the window or in a magazine or in the paper or something. But, like, you always think, how do you get into all that? And I sort of twigged that you've just got to do it. We just got to do it. And it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. It doesn't matter. As long as you're doing it, putting your heart and soul into it, no one can say nothing to you. You know, it's like... And I'm all up for people working and doing jobs, because without all people working and doing their jobs, we wouldn't be anywhere.
Yeah, it's true.
When I was in the jungle and I was saying to, you know, how much I loved everybody that was in, who I'd become friends with, there was no outside contact, no internet and phone calls or anything like that. And I was saying about how much I loved everybody there, how much I wasn't thinking about the people back home. Even though without those people back home, I wouldn't be there. You know, like, so I acknowledge that existence and that what happened. But what it made me twig was that in that moment right now, I thank these people here, and I'm not going to think about those people back home, because maybe somewhere along the line, they don't see it the same way. They see it as, like, you just said, like, most people see it as abnormal. Maybe not the word abnormal, but this is a different, unique way of living compared to the normal man.
Yeah.
And when you're surrounded by the normal man a lot, you know, you feel like you stick out a little bit, and it can put you off. I think, you know, it hasn't put me off. I actually quite like it. I actually like the fact that somewhere along the line, I might be able to inspire other young people to maybe get from out... the wings of their parents and do what they want to do. You know, I'm like everybody else. I listen to my folks. I listen to them all the time, and they were great, or are great. But, like, to do this, it took a little bit of convincing, you know, because they don't know about it. Like, I don't know about it. Until you go and do these things, you don't know what it's going to be like. Like, I know people that have done skydives and stuff, and everybody can picture what a skydive is like because we've seen the video.
Yeah.
But you don't know until you do it what it really is like and how it goes about it. You've got to do it to know. And that's my point. You've got, like, so I might be living a unique life, but it's not that unique, because if you want, you can do it too. You know, everybody can. If you want, that's the thing. That's the beauty of life.
See, this is what I'm saying, right? This is deep right now. I mean, I'm thoroughly enjoying this. It kind of is.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to make you play some music in a minute, right?
Okay, you have to make me. I'm happy to.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, works both ways then, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm going to play some Disclosure and some Foals in the build-up to Adam Sinclair playing his good tunes. So we'll see him in a couple of seconds. Feature Islands. Here on Phoenix FM, you're listening to Shades of Che, and I have Adam Sinclair in the studio. Hello, Adam, again.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Again. Right, okay, well, you're going to play us a song in a second.
I am,
And this song is on the Temptower compilation.
It is. It's called Passenger. Written on a walk home, as we were just talking about.
Yes, indeed. Right, okay, so if I give you the signal, you can take it away, young man. All
thanks.
Right?
Give me that signal. Well, man, that fog was thick this morning. You could hardly see the tops of the trees, but it was light warm, and soon I knew I'd be home. Well, as it got lighter, well, I could see that it was light rain that's on its way to cover me again. I'm a passenger, and there's no witness to this. I'm a passenger, and there's no witness to this. And I like to walk to see my thoughts come and go. And I like to control all of these emotions, like what I think is right and what I think is real. 'Cause what I think is right is apparently not real. But in other circles I can let it all out, and I can't say what I mean. But in other circles I can let it all out, 'cause they're turning their back on me. I'm a passenger, and there's no witness to this. I'm a passenger, and there's no witness to this.
That's what I'm talking about.
Jungle vibes.
Jungle vibes.
Tropical vibes.
No, it was good, mate. It was really good.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, that's called Passenger. It's on the Thames Delta compilation, recorded at Liquidate Studios, guys.
Did you record more with Dorian?
No, I've not ever recorded with Dorian yet. That was done with other guys, with the guys from Trips and the Numbers and Big C Noise.
Okay.
They're the guys that contributed on the song. That's the full band playing on the song. Is the two of the dudes from Tricks and the Numbers and Big C Noise. Big up to those guys. And then, I'm going to do some recording with Dorian at a later date, I think.
Brilliant. So have you got more stuff recorded with Tricks and Numbers Band?
No, nothing else recorded. That single is my first ever studio recording. I've never done anything else before. We just done it in one day. Like, we had the song, I think, like Rob Oliver, who helped me, well, who produced the track. He sort of heard me play at his house, and then he just said, yeah, come down to the studio, which they built, and they've all funded themselves, and we recorded it in a day. It was in a day. It was just done and like mixed, and I think that sort of, then we, like I said before, 7 days later it was on the airwaves. It was almost like it was a little bit too easy and too good to be true, almost. I couldn't believe it.
So, but when was that recorded?
That was recorded in August.
Right, okay.
I recorded it in the August, And in the beginning of September, I started doing the shows. And that's when I met all you guys. I think it's the 6th of September I started doing regular shows, and I haven't stopped since.
Nice.
Recorded it the month before that, and then I was away a month before that, getting inspiration and stuff.
So you haven't actually stopped then? From the moment you got back?
No, I haven't. No. Pretty much. Like, you know, it would seem to the people close to me that I've done a lot of nothing, but, you know, these these songs, you know, they don't write themselves, I suppose.
So have you written quite a lot in the last maybe year? So have you got a massive back catalogue now?
I have enough for a record, and I have a lot of off cuts as well, which I could do something with, which I probably won't, you know, but I've got enough for a record and a whole show's worth of material of my own, which I'm just, I've been practicing and playing since September, basically just been road testing all the music. A lot of the time it was just me in my bedroom or something, like on a beach or something, by myself playing these songs or writing these songs. And like the last batch of songs that I had when I was playing in Melbourne, I had a whole different batch of songs which I've just scrapped now. They never got recorded. They weren't rubbish or anything. It's just that I found that with the progression of my songwriting, I found that I just needed to bin those and just work on this new material.
Did you not want to, with the songs that you had in Melbourne, do you not want to like have a pin? In other words, that you're sticking it and say, like, this is what I've done and this is what I've got to sort of show for it. Like, well, you didn't want anything like physical or on a computer, which you...
Well, actually, tell a lie, like, I did do some sessions while I was there, and they were recorded. They were, like, it was just like a bit like this, like live radio sessions. It was called the Richmond Sessions.
Yes.
My friend, my buddy helped me out with. And so there is 3 videos on YouTube, actually. And there's a video of me playing a song at a show of mine that I was, my first ever, like, name was on a poster in Melbourne.
Yes.
And people pay $10 to get in, and that never happened to me before. So, and there's someone's recorded that and put that on YouTube. But as for there's a defining EP or record, no, there's nothing for Melbourne. There's no record apart from, I suppose, them 3 songs that are on YouTube, I suppose.
Is this something you want to look to do? Like, you want to record more? Did you want to have an EP out or an album out or anything like that?
In an ideal world, yes. That's the first thing you want out. When you start writing music, you think, all right, I want an album's out. I want to do a Prince and make an album every year, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not as easy as that. Even though I've had a single out and it seemed like it was really easy. But it's not as easy as that because... Like,
I agree.
Do you know how... I mean, I'm sure you will wholeheartedly agree with this next statement. How hard it is to really get material, real material. The stuff that you want to put down into a song, you think is worthy enough. And so with this new material, I felt like, right, now it's the time to actually record something because the material was worthy of it. Maybe subconsciously I didn't record anything in Melbourne because I knew it wasn't good enough, you know? Maybe because otherwise I think I would have tried to get out there a bit more. I think I would have done more independent radio. I think I would have done more chances of getting and playing and being recorded on stuff. But I didn't. I decided just to work on the stagecraft. And look, I'm not the most talented guy in the world, but what I am is self-taught. And that's by just getting up on stage and just learning how to sing into a microphone or what's comfortable for you on stage and how you approach a show, how you get on stage and you know what's in your head already, ready to go. You know, you're ready to go with what your material is at any point. I've practiced so much now, Shay, that I can play my set in any order at any time.
Yes.
And once upon a time, I didn't know how to do that. And so I had to do shows to learn, you know, like everybody else. And unless you do it, you don't know what you're doing.
See, that's a really funny thing you just said the other night. I had the same sort of thing the other night where I had a discussion with, you know, 3 other guys in a rehearsal room over it.
Yeah.
But we have a song and you kind of think of it and you play it for such a long time and you really come to say knowing when you're going to go and record it at some point, it's just not right. It's just not, you know, it's not what you want. It's, you know, you want something a bit different and or something better. Maybe the song's maybe not that bad, as you just said, but you know that you have a certain standard, you stick to it. And I think, you know, I mean, you just said to yourself that you're not the most talented guy. I think talent, as a word, talent is very fragile, because I kind of feel when someone says talent, as if you say it's God gifted.
Well, some people are really talented because they put in the hours and studied.
I never studied music, you see,
and like I'm self-taught, and that's I put it down to that. Like, maybe the best musicians in the world weren't taught. Maybe they weren't, you know. No. But there is a certain element to music theory which I just don't have a clue about. So put me in a room with other musicians who do know that, and I look like a schmuck. You know what I mean? So, like, when I say I'm not that talented, I mean, well, yeah, like, I'm not that talented. Put me with an orchestra and they say, right, what would you like the orchestra to play, Adam? I was like, I don't know. I have no idea how to write music like that. No idea. So, you know, but like everybody, whoever, you've got to go, I suppose you've got to be in their rooms with the orchestras to learn, I suppose.
That's right, yeah.
And you've got to be in that situation. And if I wasn't doing this for a job, I say, like, loosely, you know, maybe like that if you weren't, if I wasn't in the pound seat right now to be able to go, right, I'm going to go really get stuck into this music. Mm. If I wasn't had that mentality, maybe I'll never, ever be in a room with an orchestra. But as I'm doing it, like, it's not like it's a goal of mine, but, you know, I'm pointing myself in that direction. I'm in pole position to be in a room with an orchestra because I'm doing music.
Yes.
Like, if you just go, oh, no, I'll just write songs and stay, you know, not really take it anywhere, but knowing the inside you really want to.
Yeah,
you're never going to get them opportunities to learn these things. Like, I like to talk to other people who play live and ask them about how, like, what rooms they like to play in and stuff like that. I like all the technical stuff. Like, if I went to watch a gig, I'm looking at all the equipment, you know, I'd watch all the equipment and how, because that's all really important, you know. Like, with, like, the guys from Tricks and the Numbers and that, they're big into their gear, like, all the they've got the best equipment, and that's inspiring to me because they put a lot of thought into it. And to have good equipment, you know that there's going to be a degree of you going to be sounding damn good if you've got good equipment. And I admire that a lot. Like Prince, you're going to see Prince, he might have the same guitar for the last 40 years, but what's that guitar plugged into? Like, the best amp in the world.
Yes,
you know what I mean? You know, so, like, there's a thing. And, like, talking of Prince again, is that his stagecraft is phenomenal. And I'm just a solo guy. Like, but if you watch Prince, say you stripped all of the band away from Prince, and he'd still be good.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He'd still be good. There's not that many bands where you could do that, artists where you could really do that. There's a lot, don't get me wrong. The Leonard Cohens of this world and all these guys that are tender acoustic players and stuff. But, like, someone like Prince, he would rock the house, just him and a guitar, nothing else, and he could probably play 4 hours. That's talent. That's it. Because, like, you know, he might not have ever been taught music theory, but that's talent. I've been watching a lot of archive footage of Prince, and it's hard not to just be inspired to have as much guts as him. Like, he's obviously a great musician. We all know and love his music. Yeah. But, like, the guts that are, like, I spoke about him recently, and I said that, you know, like, he's got huge guts to do what he done in the time that he done it in. Like, in he hit it big in the mid 80s when metrosexualism and, like, sort of gay rights were quite contested back then. And look what he looked like in the mid 80s is when Purple Rain came out. He's wearing something like a figure skater would wear. And, you know, like that takes guts. Mm. And to do what he done, I mean, just look what his music was in the early days. His early music was funky as hell in the early days. And that takes guts. And that's what I think the best artists in the world are. The ones that might not be, like, I mean, Prince is a bad example in this case because he's super talented. But sometimes, you know, like, it's just that because they've got the guts to get up there and do it that they're good. Like Nina Simone, she was classically trained on the piano, but she was never taught to sing. But her attitude to singing was get out there and just do it. And she's got, everybody knows Nina Simone's voice when you hear it.
Yes.
But it isn't a classically good voice. It isn't. That's just the way she sounded. She didn't add anything to or take anything away from her performance. It's just, that's raw talent. And that is guts. She just got up there, and she knew that she was great on the piano, but she wasn't the best singer, but she'd done it anyway. And now she's renowned as one of the greatest female singers that have ever walked the planet. That's guts. And I'm interested in that, Shay.
Well, there you go. I can't believe it's nearly 5 to 9.
I've just been talking to your ears off.
That's good, though. You've made my job very easy this evening, I must admit that.
Thanks.
But it's good. It's good.
I love to talk.
Yeah, it's good to hear you, honestly. We are going to have some Kasabian, some Matt Toobie, who we know well.
Yeah, I've got his button on my coat this evening, just randomly.
Oh, did you get threatened for that?
Threatened?
Oh, yeah, I got threatened.
No?
No, I've got my badge in my room, like, on the side, and apparently I've got to wear it every time I go out.
I didn't realise that he was such, like, a mafia boss, old Matt Toobie.
Yeah.
I didn't realise.
Yeah.
I didn't realise. I always had him down as a bit of a Rodney character from Fools and Horses. But he's really the Del Boy.
He's gangster.
He's G, man.
Right, we have some Kasabian, Matt Toobie, and some SJ Denny coming up next, and we have some more music from R. Adam Sinclair.
Why do we become true?
on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
We have some Matt Toby here on Phoenix FM with Lady in Grey and some SJ Denny with so much more.